Here we go. Here we go.
Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We're actually, should be noted, we're recording this live from the log shoot at the Mall of America. Oh, we're stuck here just at the top before that last big drop, and we figured we may as well crank out this episode because who knows how long we'll be here for. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
My favorite was always that log float, but I always did it right away, and then the rest of my experience at the Mall of America was miserable because I was soaking wet. I don't really know why they didn't plan for that, but I'm dry right now, and I'm Harry Mackin, and you can find me at Shiitake Harry.
Rest in peace, Camp Snoopy. I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Camp Snoopy forever. Also with us today is someone who has sworn revenge upon us all, and that is super producer Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish that kids is spelled with a Z. Also with us today is, also with us today, a lot of alsos, a lot of fine folks on the pod today, and this is a very special guest we've got with us. Particularly so because I believe, someone feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this episode makes him the first person to guest in each of our first three seasons of the pod. Please welcome back to the show, Dan Nagin. Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much. I want to say that the last time I rode the log flume at Mall of America, they had Paul Bunyan dress up as Hulk Hogan from when there was Hulk's Pasta Mania, and it was a great time.
That sounds amazing.
That is, in a show that's all about nostalgia, that is maybe peak nostalgia. And I'm going to mine your brain a little bit more, Dan, because, before we really get into it, I'm curious to know if there are any, memories or images that really stick with you from the episode that we're going to dig into today. You know, anything in particular that makes you kind of gravitate toward this one in particular?
Yeah, this was one of the first ones that jumped to my mind when I was asked if there were any from season three that I wanted to guest on, because the image of Arnold and Eugene stuck at the top of the roller coaster with the fog mist getting sprayed on them for hours is one that comes really quickly to my mind whenever I think of Hey Arnold. And so right away, I was just like, I pulled that up, and that was kind of the inciting moment. There's a lot of commonality between this one and some of the other stuff that I've guested on, primarily with that first episode, just being just another straight up farce of just misunderstandings. And both of them are, I'm just going to drop it right now. Both of these episodes are horror movies, just short story horror, perfectly encapsulated in a children's show.
Extremely correct, and also a spectacular tease of what's to come on this episode. Thank you very much, Dan. It should be noted, we are here today to talk about episode 53 of Hey Arnold. And for those of you keeping track at home, that is season 3, episode 13, going by production code order. And we're going to start with episode 53A, which is called Sid's Revenge. Original air date, November 2nd, 1998. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Sid swears vengeance with a voodoo doll made out of a bar of soap, carved into the form of Principal Warts, forgiving him detention for a prank he did not pull, and then believes that he killed him. That was all one sentence. And as we always do, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. Dan Povenmire directed this one, and Michelle Lamoureux got the writing credit for this one. So shout outs to the two of them. Emily, let's kick it to you first. What did you think about the revenge that Sid got?
Yeah, man, Sid's revenge. He is having quite a season three this time around. I know we put him on watch a couple episodes ago. He was on thin ice for some of his meanness and cruelty towards Big Patty. He's kind of been pushing people's buttons around this season in particular. But we've also gotten to know him better, and I think he's pretty funny as a character overall. And yeah, so I think this is a really good episode, and as Dan already characterized, it's a great horror episode of a children's show. Yeah, I think there's a lot of really good like TV and movie tropes used in a funny way throughout this episode that I think maybe all of us were kind of being reminded of certain things. Me and Harry were pointing out the Arrested Development like scene where there's the hospital mix up where you think someone in the cast, the full body cast, is Principal Ward's, but is in fact, of course, someone else. There's the Fargo-like cop, the Marge Gunderson cop that appears, and I think she's appeared maybe once before, so it's always kind of a hoot and a half to see her, though, because she's drawn up so like specifically to reference that Fargo character. But yeah, I think this is a very funny episode, and one that, like, as I was rewatching it ahead of the watch party, I wasn't sure if I had seen it before, which is kind of how it's been going this season in general for me, not really knowing all of them or having, you know, some of these are new to me. But I did recognize this one once I saw the still of the Principal Ward's soap sculpture. So that really stood out to me and I guess stayed with me in the back of my memory. So yeah, really funny stuff. Amazing soap sculpture too. Like Sid is artistic, you know, he's got some talent there, carving it out of from a spoon. And the whole scene too, where he's carving the sculpture to get back at the principal for falsely accusing him of, you know, throwing the rubber vomit, which Principal Ward trips on at the beginning of the episode. So Sid's like jumping up on the bed, maniacal laughing. There's thunder and lightning going on in the background where he's in his room. And yeah, and then I like how this just kind of continues on through a series of coincidences, both funny and amusing and, you know, scary, because we, you know, starts one right after the other. You're like, wait, where is Principal Ward? So we know he's probably not dead, but where actually has he been? So yeah, and I think it humanizes Principal Ward's too in a way we haven't maybe seen as much in other episodes. We at least learn, you know, he likes pistachio ice cream and he likes gardening and he's got a roommate and stuff like that. So, you know, he's a principal, but also there's a few little charming things we learn about him as a person outside of school. And I just also wanted to say that I really like when Sid is grappling with what has happened in the middle of the episode and he pulls Arnold into the closet and he just goes, Arnold, I've got to talk to you. I killed Principal Ward's. But there's like no pauses or breaks. It's just like, I've got to talk to you. I killed Principal Ward's. It's almost like doesn't skip a beat. Whereas any other show or in most shows or movies or whatever, there's going to be some sort of dramatic pause there. But Sid has like lost it and he's at the brink of just going crazy. So yeah, I really like that delivery. And I think it's a fun episode. I'm excited to hear what everyone else thinks.
Yeah, a lot of great deliveries from Sid and a lot of, you know, great deliveries of top level thoughts. Thank you, Emily. Hopefully Harry can keep that going with his takes. Harry, what'd you think of this episode? Dan's shaking his head.
Oh,
Harry,
boy, we'll see.
It seems like you're in for a tough one.
Yeah, always an uphill battle following Emily. I like this episode a lot. I think it's kind of a great unsung episode because it's such a good example of what Hey Arnold can do with its extended cast of characters. I kept thinking about that, right? About how, like, it makes sense that Sid is not a main character because I think his shtick would be very anxiety-inducing and kind of annoying. But, like, used this way, we can use Sid to create a type of episode that wouldn't make sense for any of the main cast and slots in perfectly for both this world and him as a character. And this episode fully makes me a Sid apologist. I'm sorry, but I think I like Sid a lot. I think the thing about Sid is that he is a prisoner to his anxieties. And he is also a melodramatic prisoner to his anxieties. And I think elementary school Harry might relate more to Sid than any of the other characters on this show, because just like the entire plot of this episode is something fabricated from Sid's imagination and persecution complex, that was most of my like early childhood, right? Is and even like somebody else brings this up, right? Like even in the comments of the Hey Arnold wiki, the first comment is, in this episode Sid acts and sounds like a character on Rugrats, lol. And like shout outs, they're kind of right, and like it's because it's all in his head, right? But like it doesn't matter, and there's something about the experience of childhood being all about the sort of anxieties that you project onto the world to sort of like give your life a sense of narrative or like have something to like worry about. And I remember so distinctly spending all of my time in those mental spaces when I was like an 8-year-old kid, right? It would be like, okay, like I would always find some crazy thing to worry about. Like, oh, I might have even brought this up on an earlier episode, but like I would drink from a water fountain and then later on some other kid would say he saw a spider by the water fountain, and that would become like, oh, I ate a spider, it's gonna lay eggs inside me and I'm gonna die. Or like even weirder things, right? Like, oh, I something I left behind in class is going to start a fire, or I hurt somebody's feelings, or I didn't recycle my trash or my recyclables. I threw them in the trash. So that's going to break down something and I'm going to get arrested. So like just all of that stuff. So I think that like this is such a good angle on a kid's TV show, right? Like especially the fact that like Sid doesn't really learn anything. We get to see that it's all in Sid's head. We get to see Sid like wrap himself up in this like terrible anxiety as a result, and it all sort of amounts to nothing, right? Or does it? I just think it creates such a great vibe for such a distinct and unique episode of Hey Arnold that, again, it works really well because we already know Sid as a character, right? So it's really fun to see this side of him, especially his interactions with Arnold, where we remember how melodramatic he tends to be and how he makes mountains of molehills all the time. And you're right, like, Cody, he has so many great line readings in this one, right? Like, he's like, he's buried under the tree. Like, he has all of these, like, he's so upset. And I feel so upset watching him go through this. And I, you know, you just want him to be okay, but also you're having a lot of fun watching it all happen. Really funny episode. Definitely a horror movie in reference to Dan's comment. If only because it's like psychological horror, right? It's like we see a man brought to like hit the absolute limits of his sanity by his guilt and persecution complex. Maybe like a Martin Scorsese movie more than a Paul Schrader movie in reference to an earlier discussion we have. But those are my thoughts. I'm really excited to hear what Dan thinks.
Yeah, me as well. As we apparently have watched the third movie in a horror trilogy, you know, everybody knows the Vavitch, the Babadook. We have Little Soap Man kind of tying up the loose ends here. But yeah, Dan, same questions to you. What'd you think of this episode? Were you, you know, this, unhinged of an 8-year-old? Anything that you would care to address? We're all ears.
I was not this unhinged of an 8-year-old, at least not nearly to the level that Harry expressed. Big surprise, yeah. But I was racked with anxiety all the time and would overestimate things in my imagination and make mountains out of molehills constantly. And I agree with what Harry said. This episode is like an unsung episode. I came in wanting to talk about that roller coaster episode, and this episode kicks so hard. It's so silly, and it really does play into the shtick of Sid so well. And it makes me think of, at least with regard to what Harry was saying about him kind of fabricating so much and getting so wrapped up in his own perceived impression of the world. I think it's like season 4, whichever episode where he becomes like a germaphobe and shuts himself into his apartment.
That's right.
That's going to be a clutch episode. I might want to come back for that one, but it's good stuff. And I really, the one thing that I like most about this episode is Arnold is such a passive person observing this, where he's just there trying to level out Sid. And the amazing moment is near the end, where even Arnold is trying his best to say, like, Sid, you're crazy. You didn't kill Warts. But even when they're looking at the mount, like the dirt pile, he's just like, I don't know. I mean, you probably didn't. And speaking of killer line deliveries, like, everyone's shouted out Sid's, the doctor gives an insane line reading where he knows he's messing with this child who is having a meltdown. He knows what he's doing. He pauses and he's like, well, Principal Watts says five beats. I counted it. Five full beats. Checked out.
He also, like, it's even animated so well where, like, he like looks around like he's trying to think of the right word, and then he hits him with checked out.
Right. It's a very paranoid episode, and not to deviate away from saying, like, it's Scorsese-esque or like Paul Schrader, this is like a Hitchcock, where it's very paranoid, or a modern impression, like, I could very much see the Safdie brothers doing a movie where it's just Sid.
Oh, that's the best suggestion so far, absolutely. Sid as the star of Uncut Gems.
I'm just picturing him in... I was picturing Good Time.
This is how he wins. Something that only occurred to me as Dan was talking was, you know, we bring him on for all these prank-filled episodes, because he's Dan's a schemer. He's the schemer of our social circles. Yeah, you rub your hands together, you weirdo. In a good way, in the best way. This episode is a ton of fun. What Dan actually brought up about Arnold was something that really fascinated me a lot while watching. Just, you know, we've had our ups and downs with Arnold in season three, as, you know, Craig and friends integrate Arnold in different ways. They're trying to utilize, this extended cast of characters and, you know, bring either not bringing Arnold in at all, more often than not bringing him in and using him to sort of underscore the subtext, and by bringing in Arnold, very often making that text. But it was, you know, kind of a nice, I don't want to say subversion, but a different use of Arnold, where he's coming and being his consoling self. And you can see him over the course of the episode. You know, Sid got kind of jokerfied. Arnold is maybe in the early stages of getting jokerfied as he listens to his friend go further and further down this deranged rabbit hole. So that was really charming in its own way to see just Arnold being like, as Dan said, you didn't kill Principal Warts. Well, you probably didn't kill Principal Warts. And just getting more and more flustered about it. A lot of, as it's been called out by Emily and others, a lot of really fun, I'll use an adjective other than fun when I feel it's appropriate, but a lot of fun tropes being brought in. A few times I was sort of battling internally of like, would I find this episode to be more enjoyable, more pleasant, more horrific if the dramatic irony weren't there? And we kind of went the whole episode thinking, like, maybe actually thinking that Principal Warts was dead instead of getting, you know, him going into the elevator singing, humming his little boopy doop song.
You know, I honestly wonder if they thought it would be too much for the audience.
It would have been. And maybe that's the only thing preventing this from being, you know, something Hitchcockian in nature. Although Principal Warts going into the elevator feels very much like a Hitchcock cameo that he would have inserted of himself into one of his movies. All that is to say, you know, one that was very, this is one of the many season three episodes that I could remember, you know, after reading the one or two sentence summary. And then as the little pieces fell into place, you know, I did start to remember Sid's very wild, excited line readings, and a lot of the little beats that came into play, you know, the soap doll. It's, you know, it's an iconic Hey Arnold totem. I don't know, a lot of good stuff.
One thing that both you and Dan brought up that's so good is the fact that like Arnold is brought into the paranoid world, because like that is another thing that this episode gets so right about kids, right? Is that like my anxieties, well, always prompted by my own sort of like overactive imagination, were also always exacerbated by my friends or by people around me, right? Like you remember being a kid and like being at a sleepover and you would just like, you would be out after dark or something, and you would, along with your friends, sort of like generate this absolute certainty that you were being stalked or something like that. And like there are other episodes of Hey Arnold that are explicitly all about that too, right? Like the man with the golden hook for an arm. But it's so much fun to watch Arnold be like sort of dragged into Sid's paranoia. And then the other big thing about Sid that I love so much is that he's just in his feelings so hard all the time. And I think that that's another great sort of like example of what makes him such a well-written children's character, right? It's like, I feel wistful or sad or nostalgic about the fact that I can no longer sort of experience the peaks and lows of childhood emotions. But then I watch something like this and I'm like, man, maybe it's not actually that bad, because I remember being like Sid and it was exhausting where it's like, oh, like my principal has done me wrong. Now for the next 4 hours of my life, my entire life is about this. It's like everything else was leading up to this moment where I carved this soap doll, and like I've discarded all of the trappings of youth, and now what I am about is taking my sweet revenge. And then he's like forgotten that, right? By the next day, it's like, oh no, I'm like, now he's remorseful. And then by the end, he sort of like loops back on the revenge, showing us that for all of his sort of apparent journey, those emotions are still going to keep winning out in the end. It's just really good. It's so much fun to follow Sid's journey in this episode. And I think that like, the dramatic irony makes it funnier, if not sort of like more thrilling, because I think that it's really important that Sid is sort of like seen as a little ridiculous in this episode, for as sympathetic as he's meant to be.
What I'm stunned Harry has not mentioned at all, and I don't know if everyone else is having the same thought, listeners are probably thinking this, is how this episode is just straight up about profiling as well. Like how did that not come up? The tyranny of the authority figure at play here, where Warts just targets, singles out Sid. Every kid in that cafeteria was laughing at him when he slipped on the fake rubber vomit. And yet Sid, because he's the kind of like slacker looking kid, the rundown kid wearing go-go boots, he's the one that Warts is immediately just like, you're the one that did this, doesn't listen to anything, gives him a weeks of detention. And then at the end of the episode, he is punished again for something he did outside of school. Warts's jurisdiction does not extend outside of the walls of that school. That's absolutely ridiculous. You can't police that. This has nothing to do with the school. It doesn't extend into the boundaries of it. You're just on the sidewalk in front of an ice cream shop. Unbelievable. So I agree with Harry, where I feel sympathy for Sid because he's unjustly persecuted in this and he's put through psychological torture.
Thank you, Dan. That's exactly right.
Hey, justice for, well, insert whoever is convenient. In this case, it sounds like it's justice for Harry. You saying that, Dan, sort of brings me back to the closest example of that I guess I had. I remember semi-distinctly a middle school assembly where they tried to police what students were saying in like AOL Instant Messenger chat rooms. It's just like, hey, bring in a transcript of, you know, the awful stuff that somebody said. And like, hey, and granted, you know, 12, 13 year olds, I don't mean to brag too much. I'll flex a little bit. I'm a certified expert in Microsoft Paint. I'm sure I could have whipped up, you know, something. Best backup. Don't get on my bad side. Nobody had stooped to those levels in middle school. Nobody had thought of that. It didn't really amount to a whole lot. I mean, it does make me wonder though. I know we're all an upstanding group of citizens here, but I'm wondering if anybody here has gotten in trouble for something that they didn't actually do. If and I don't have anything like super fascinating. I remember, it was eighth grade Spanish. We had a substitute, and we were doing the classic, you know, like annoying the substitute, being loud and obnoxious. And it was one of those instances of the substitute just like grasping at straws out in the audience. And I think I was like smiling at what was going on. You know, I was too afraid of authority when I was 13, so I didn't do a whole, but I was smiling at the goings on because, you know, at that point, we were all a bunch of Dan Nagans. We were all a bunch of little schemers. And so, like, she called me up because I was smiling. And she was like, "Why are you smiling?" And I was like, "I don't know."
Wow, that's exactly what happened to Sid.
Yeah, pretty much. Just, like, I was a boy happy to learn, probably. I tested out of a bunch of Spanish in college, so my time in that classroom paid dividends.
Okay.
All I'm saying is I'm dumber now than I was back then. But that was me tossing the ball up. Hopefully somebody has a more interesting experience than I do. Dan, can you top that?
It depends on how you define interesting, and the fact that it involves me, it might be more interesting. But no,
that
I mean, you said in jest that a bunch of Dan Nagans being little schemers and stinkers in the classroom. That's exactly, I had that same experience, Cody, happened to me so many times, because when I was a kid, I still have it where I can't keep a straight face, especially in a serious situation. And numerous times in the classroom, someone would pull a prank of some sort, everyone would be laughing, and then the teacher would get really serious. And then I just, at that moment when people, like, the tone shifts in the room, that's when I find it the funniest. And I could not contain myself. I would get sent to the principal's all the time. I would get sent out into the hallway to go and stare at the lockers. It was terrible. I never had to scrub the floor with a toothbrush, but I certainly had my fair share of getting unjustly called upon. Granted, there was also some just instances of that happening as well.
I was racking my brain, but most of the times I got detention were for things I did do and deserved to have detention for. But there was one time when I was really young. I was like just like a 6-year-old little fucking, like, oh, excuse me, gremlin of a person. And my lips were really chapped, right? Because I was a little kid and I didn't know what chapstick was and all of that. And I kept like licking my lips in class. And this like para, she wasn't a teacher. She was like a after school program person. She like got very paranoid about the fact that I was sticking my tongue out at her when she couldn't see, she couldn't see me. And then like just missing it every time she like turned, which like I almost wish I had done, because I reduced this woman to she was like a wreck by the end of this class. And like, she made me stay behind. She got really mad at me. She was like, "It's so disrespectful." I didn't know what disrespectful meant, 'cause I was like 6 years old. But yeah, I was literally just licking my chops because I had dry lips, and she really came after me. So I carved a soap doll in her likeness, and let's just say she hasn't bothered me since then, all these years.
Very adequate, appropriate framing. Nobody needs to read into that any further. I mean, Emily, you seem like, I'm going to put all my cards on the table. You seem like the best one out of all of us. But if you have, a hidden dark past, I feel like I speak for our entire listening community when I say now's the time to own up to any either legitimate or false accusations that have been thrown upon you in your schooling career. I don't know, if you want. I was expecting accusations against Dan of being, the best, a basketball player at his school, accusing him of being so good at hooping. Dan, you're very tall.
I never got in trouble for hooping too hard. They applauded it. They put me on their shoulders and they cheered for me. They were like, "Dan, you hoop so hard."
Dan used to be carried in the arms of cheerleaders. Man, shout out to Dan, high school hero. And you know what? Shout out to us and any of the lingering thoughts or shout outs that we might have to close this one out. Anybody got anything before
we pivot? Yeah, you know, I got to say one more thing about the false persecution of Sid by the coward Principal Warts, which is that it, like, even that element of this is so funny and so weird and so offbeat for Hey Arnold, because it's like, it's such bald-faced, no offense to Mr. Warts, no pun intended, like, injustice, and it really creates this like high emotion. It's a very like arch episode. Do you know what I mean? It's like, there's, from the very start of this episode, like, we are in a different emotional space than we usually are in Hey Arnold episodes. And I really like that. And I really think that this episode is like a great example of Hey Arnold sort of like using season 3 to branch out a little bit and explore a little bit of the possibilities, to great effect in this case.
Yeah, my shout out to, I think I have just two of them, but one goes to the purple bags under Sid's eyes, which I think just are a great character design touch throughout this episode, especially when he looks in the mirror that first time and it like mirrors the commercial he's watching or whatever's on TV that then gives him the grand idea to make this soap sculpture. And then also shout out to Mr. Simmons, who apparently has an incredible motorcycle that's just parked in the teacher's parking lot. It's like a dark purple or a dark blue or something with some like pink flowers or pattern going on. It just showed it really quickly with his name tag. But yeah, I did not know he had a cool motorcycle. So shout outs indeed there.
I echo the shout out for the motorcycle. Emily, you beat me to it, but that, when it cuts to that and you just see Simmons' name in front of that, I was like, wait, what? Has this been shown in another episode? But similarly, in that same moment, shout out to the really sinister janitor who is like an absolute freak. just mopping the namespace where Warts's name is at. Like, I don't think that's going to get the paint off, but it's a great moment, and it's just super weird and feels out of place in this episode, where it's like, did they just walk into a different TV show here? And another shout out just to that really creepy jerk doctor as well, because his line delivery is fantastic. And just one final thing to pick up on what Harry said, that moment of Warts targeting Sid is so good, because the way that Warts even describes it, of this type of harmless practical joke is a serious matter, really just tells you like, oh, this episode has no foundation in reality. I'm great. I'm fine with this.
You know what? Takes a brave man to say that, but I'm on board with that. And not to rush us to the finish line here, I just saw an ad on the TV for some revenge chocolate. So I'm going to give these folks a call. We'll take a quick pause here, but do not touch that dial, because we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. It's time for episode 53B, and don't jinx it! This episode is, of course, called Roller Coaster. Original air date, November 2nd, 1998. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. A roller coaster breaks down while Eugene, air quotes, the Jinx, and Arnold are at the top of its tallest drop. And once again, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode, excuse me, possible. We've got two directors this time. Christine Kolosoff and Larry Linklater co-directed, and the Purdman returneth. Joseph Purdy wrote this episode. So shout outs to everybody. Shout outs to Harry, who's going to kick off our top level thoughts about this episode. Harry, how is this roller coaster of an episode for you?
Thank you, Cody. I think this is a really great pairing with Sid's Revenge, right? Because it's another episode that primarily focuses on a side character. The difference here being, I feel like Sid's Revenge really etches Sid's character out, maybe for the first time, really explicitly, whereas we've had a lot of Eugene episodes a lot like this one before. That being said, I think that this episode goes some new places that I really like. The larger social dynamic of Eugene is further explored here. It had been explored before, but I really like the idea that, like, Eugene is a known and accepted jinx, but it is also something that ostracizes him, that he chafes at, right? And like that he has very human feelings about, even though he always tries to look on the bright side. I don't believe we had ever heard that Eugene was always looking on the bright side as sort of a direct consequence of the fact that he is a jinx, and that he sort of built that as a defense mechanism into his personality. He's very funny in this episode. He's very annoying. Speaking of which, even our Saint Arnold is like, again, like one more notch toward his eventual Jokerification episode over episode. It's like when you, and you really feel it, right? Like when Arnold is sitting up in there in the roller coaster and the mist is hitting him in the face and Eugene is singing the Itsy Bitsy Little Spider and talking about how everything's going to be all right. It's like, man, Arnold, you can see it in his eyes. He's like, I'm going to throttle this dude. He doesn't, because Arnold has the patience of a saint. But it gets to a really interesting place and in another really interesting aspect of Eugene as a character that we've talked about a little bit before, but it is that, like, I really enjoy that Hey Arnold does not agree with Arnold's stance, right? Which is that it's all in Eugene's head, that Eugene isn't really a klutz, he's not really a jinx, and he's making it up, right? Like Arnold sort of like benevolently gaslights Eugene a little bit, or tries to in this episode, where he's like, no, Eugene, everybody, you know, nobody thinks that about you. And it's like, they 100% do, because it's 100% true. And even Eugene is like, it is true, Arnold. And I like that Hey Arnold doesn't say, like, this kid is not a jinx, and therefore he deserves to be treated with respect as a member of the group. What Hey Arnold ends up saying is, this kid is a jinx, comma, and he deserves to be treated with respect and made part of the group, right? Like, by the end of the episode, they get to see other traits that Eugene has, right? The fact that he's actually quite brave, the fact that his positivity can actually make him very mature and very graceful in crisis, and all of these things that make him sort of a valued team member or a valued member of the group. But the episode never says, like, and it doesn't suck that he's a jinx. It's like, that's just something you got to deal with, right? And I actually, like, especially for a kid's show, especially for a show that's sort of about, like, as Craig Bartlett once said, like, giving kids tools, I really love the idea that we're not dismissing that there are, like, fundamental differences between kids that will generate tension. You know, it's like, there are some things about, like, some of your best friends, for instance, like Cody, one of my best friends, love him very much. His favorite band is The National. So, you know, it's like, nobody's perfect. What do you think about that, Cody?
This is why I didn't, like, at you in the group chat, at, like, everybody, because whenever I bring up The National, you know, Seth is on my side. Seth likes The National. Everybody else makes their little jokes.
I'm on your side.
They're not The International. Yeah, I know. I should have added you, Emily. I hope you come to the show. Harry, I'm pretty indifferent about. Did you have anything else, Harry, or can I yank the mic away?
No, please. I'm finished. I would just say, in my defense, my jokes about the regional and the international are very funny. So thank you.
All right. Well, we'll let the stoop kids hive mind decide that. I will pivot to somebody who is you know, appropriately a fan of The National, and a fan of all music. One of the most musically well-versed people that I know of. Actually, there's a high concentration of those folks on this show. Not to get too deep into it. You should, you know, search for other local podcasts to listen to. But we've got Emily here. Emily, I would love to hear what you have to say about the episode of Hey Arnold called Roller Coaster.
Yeah, well, just jumping off that, I do like the fact that Eugene is singing the Itsy Bitsy Spider song, and then that's such a core part of this episode and his, like, way that he copes with the stress of being stuck on a terrifyingly tall roller coaster. Because shout out to all the queer musicians out there making great music and doing their thing, just like, you know, Eugene, my boy. But yeah, I think what Harry was saying is really on point, and I do like this episode a lot. This is definitely a memorable episode. that also stuck with me from childhood. I guess especially just because you have the, you know, your own childhood experiences of going to theme parks, and you know, whether they be in a mall or outside, like in this episode, whether they're in Florida or Texas or wherever, Six Flags nationwide. I was trying to tie that to the national again. But yeah, I don't have a lot of like big thoughts on this one other than to Harry's point, kind of like I really like the fact that they're giving kids tools in the show. So like if you're a kid who sees yourself in a Eugene-like character, maybe you don't have bad luck, but maybe there's something else that makes you feel a little ostracized or something at school or in social circles. Maybe you see yourself through that character, and that this like show can help you get oh boy, my goodness, can give you a better framework for yourself. But yeah, I really like too some of the animation that's going on in this episode, especially when they're in the roller coaster tunnel and you see like the black and white with just their eyes and the silhouette of the Arnold and Eugene. And there's like the quick, fast purple and red coaster lights going across them in the tunnel. That's pretty cool. I also like the warp height thing that's going on when they get stuck at the top. And Arnold's like, oh my God, look how high up we are. And he looks down and like the camera lens warps. And you're like, oh my God, I'm going to be sick just looking at this from their perspective. And yeah, I think shout out to Lucky the Fireman, the absolute hunk in distress that just is having a terrible day as well. We can get into that more about the whole cherry picker and the save and the day at the end there. I also think this is probably the closest the kid characters especially have ever been to death in the show. Like, oh my God, they could just die up there. Something horrible could happen to them. But luckily, Eugene pulled through. So, yeah, what an episode, a true roller coaster of emotions and great animation.
Wow, what a great point, Emily. Eugene saves a man's life straight up in this episode. Like, no bones about it, right? Like, that Lucky was a dead person. He was, as in his own words, crushed like a bug without Eugene.
And yeah, instead, this episode serves as the initial momentum toward Lucky's like prom king of Hey Arnold campaign. Of course, prom queen, as we already know, is Lorenzo's mom. Shout out to Lorenzo's mom. They'll make a lovely couple come springtime at the high school dance. But Dan, two questions for you. How do you feel about the National, and how do you feel about this episode?
I actually really like the National. I joked about it during the intermission. Well, listen, it's popular opinion may disagree with me, but I like the National, and I liked them to the extent where I watched the documentary about them. That was great. And I think this episode is great. I don't know. Eugene is king. Eugene is a king in this. He saves a man's life. He comes through. He's such a force of positivity that is so, it's so refreshing. Like, it is interesting that I feel like out of the side characters, he may be one of the ones that has had the most focused episodes, but it's nice to see this one really, really shine kind of a different light on how he views himself and his life. And despite the fact that he is living in like a Twilight Zone episode, where he is just perpetually cursed. It's like, I feel like he wakes up every day and you just hear that narration of like, you're about to enter a dimension, one very much like your own. We take you to a place you may recognize, Hillwood, Washington, a place where the lucky are unlucky, where powers work in mysterious ways. We see a boy born on Friday the 13th, plummeting over and over, stuck in a perpetual loop of tyranny as he finds himself in the Twilight Zone. Just, it's crazy. Like, the fact that he didn't go home after falling off those egg cups is wild to me.
I had never considered the Sisyphean nature of Eugene, but now I am, and what a remarkable tragic figure he is, Dan. That's a great point.
Truly, like the fact that he keeps going, I would have quit if I was Eugene. I become so fed up with a day if one thing goes poorly. Like, I step outside, I step into a puddle, I'm like, there we go, it's all downhill from here. Eugene just picks it. Like, we should all hope to be as resilient as Eugene is in this episode, despite the fact that he has disrupted Death's design and is now cursed himself, Arnold, and especially Lucky.
Man, really looking forward to the episode where we chronicle Final Destination, the Eugene. I was going to say Chronicles, but I already used Chronicle. Well, you know what? Pull out a thesaurus. We'll figure it out. But no, that's extremely correct.
The Eugene Horowitz story.
Horowitz. Wow. What a good name to fit into a horror movie title. That's amazing. And I mean, Eugene is kind of amazing. Like, I'm being sold on him a little bit. I mean, the fact that he, you know, he goes day after day, he goes to school, he hangs out with Sheena. You know, he does the same sorts of, he wears the same outfit every day. He doesn't feel like changing anything up. Every day is just an unmitigated disaster. One after the next. And he's still out here, maybe, but exuding some of the best vibes that we get of any of these characters.
A hero
in Hillwood, a true hero. And honestly, like, as far as this episode goes, yeah, I was thinking about it, and I mean, this is a great episode. I like this episode a whole bunch. It's not necessarily Inner Circle for me, but as far as my recollection of the show, and maybe for others as well, I feel like this episode does a lot of legwork in, like, it single-handedly defines Eugene, and almost like retroactively, right? Like, Dan's right in that we have a lot of focused episodes with Eugene up to this point. It's more so that he's, you know, he's a carefree, kind of tragic, but boundlessly optimistic character. And then this episode brings in the term jinx. And I feel like a lot of discourse, and like for us as well, up to this point, like, we've probably floated out the term jinx. And like this episode, while not being one of the most consequential, you know, throughout the entire series, for like, you know, for universally, you know, for a lot of the narrative or Arnold's development or anything like that. I mean, this episode pretty well, I feel like, characterizes Eugene as a person in this space, you know, for whatever that's worth. And like, there's a lot of good that comes from that. I found myself, everything that I was like questioning or thought was going to happen this episode was pretty well answered, like, almost immediately within me, it being like, oh, are we going to have any speaking females on this show this week? And then as soon as I think that, you know, we have Helga and Phoebe in line, you know, asking questions, you know, and, you know, we bring in a lot of other characters, but I'm like, oh, wow, wouldn't it be great if this was like a bottle episode with Eugene and Arnold on the roller coaster? I can't remember how this episode goes. And then we get a couple minutes of them talking on the roller coaster. And I was like, well, wouldn't it be great if we also got more like of a glimpse of everybody else on the ground? And then Harold grabs the, you know, the bullhorn and starts shouting nonsense. They all do. And it, like, you get a little bit of everything. This is a really nice episode. You even get, you know, as we shouted out Lucky before, like a really just brand spanking new character, with a miniature but extremely funny and valuable arc. This episode has a little bit of everything, and I have, yeah, fond memories of it, and it's, I don't know, I feel like one of the stronger ones of the season.
Cody, something you said really made a lot of things click for me about this episode, which is that I didn't remember that this is the first time they call Eugene a jinx. Like, that is the first time the vocab, like the term, the label is put on him. And that's like really important to the show, right? Because like, this episode becomes an episode about like not only your sort of social standing, but also like the reputation that these characters have developed with one another, right? It's an episode about grappling with labels and like grappling with the way that those labels are sort of like are perpetuating your relationship with the people around you, which like, especially to Emily's point, like the fact that Eugene is like pretty unambiguously the gay character in this show, like kind of like gives that an interesting reading, right? And it even sort of like the social dynamics that I thought were just sort of perfunctory in this episode, like you had said with Harold and Helga, and the way that these guys are basically all just being like little rascals, like they're just having fun and like kind of being like elements of chaos or agents of chaos in this episode. Like even that starts to sort of like sing, right? When you consider that, like, oh, what we're showing is that we're showing that this group has sort of like this functional like role play going on, where it's like, you know what Harold is about, you know what he's going to say, he's going to ask Arnold for his tokens when Arnold's going to marching to his certain death, and you know who Phoebe and Helga are, and like just on by that same token, no pun intended, you know who Eugene is, right? But like and very like, I know it's not a pun, Cody. It's been a long episode. But like you see that like Eugene has started to perceive and chafe at that label, and he's trying to figure out like, what does it mean that people are going to perceive me this way? Right? Or like, what does it mean that even their perceptions of me, hateful though they may be rooted in an element of my identity that I can't argue with or don't want to argue with, right? Like even Eugene never says, I am not a Jinx. Like that is something that he owns. And I really like, therefore, where this episode ends up, right? Where it's like, Eugene owns that and he deserves respect, right? And it's not because he owns that he deserves respect, but it is both true, and it should not define the way that he is treated, right? And I think that that's like a really remarkably well-stated point in this episode. And I think that like it only happens because we know Eugene as well as we do, right? Like you had said, Cody, I had almost at the beginning of this sort of dismissed this episode as like another Eugene episode, right? Where it's like, we've had Eugene's bike, we've had Eugene's goldfish. It's like, they're all sort of like playing in the same space, but there's something really like, there's a next step here when it comes to how Eugene is perceived that I think this episode does a really good job of showing.
For sure. And, you know, not only is it not, you know, just another Eugene episode, you know, like you said, it is perhaps the Eugene episode. Like it's him reaching his apex, you know, with where, I mean, not that everything has to canonically follow and carry through episode to episode, but I mean, this episode ends with everybody, you know, giving Eugene props and inviting him to go on more rides with them. The episode actually ends with Eugene actually facing certain death as he rides on that roller coaster for an extended, hilarious period of time.
Some wild stuff, huh? Because it's like experimental film where it's like, oh, like this scene has gone on so long that my memory of the episode that came before has begun to fade. It's like, oh, I was never watching anything other than Eugene fighting for his life on this endless roller coaster. And it's like, what an amazing final image and metaphor for this terribly like anxiety producing episode.
Yeah, that is the actual final destination sequence. Eugene getting locked in and then going on a roller coaster endlessly for a half hour, or what it feels like a half hour. But at the very least, I think it offers up, you know, perhaps something fascinating as we continue with season three and beyond of, you know, is the dynamic with Eugene actually any different? You know, maybe there's like a lesser, more diluted sense of hostility between the other kids when referring to Eugene. Maybe nothing has changed and this is just, you know, the sitcom thing where like we're learning a lesson this episode and like that's about it. Nothing's really going to carry through. But I don't know. I could just be also very easily forgetting future Eugene episodes. But regardless, I mean, that'll be something else worth tracking and tackling when, you know, when the time comes.
I had no idea that this was the first episode that they say the Jinx, because that is very much a thing that carries over to future episodes. I know, because I was thinking of Eugene's birthday episode earlier today, and I know that's one where he's talking and saying the Jinx a lot. And I keep trying to work some sort of HBO's the Jinx joke into something in this, and I can't quite get it. I just want to put it out there so everyone knows that I've been trying for like 20 minutes to do a joke or some bit, but I can't make it work. So, but it's so interesting that this is one that is really dealing with and grappling with like being labeled in some way, because there's such a like a heartfelt moment when you see Eugene looking back over his shoulder at the kids laughing and making and calling him a jinx and saying they want nothing to do with him. And it's something that I think anyone who has either made fun of someone else or been made fun of has experienced sort of a moment like that of realizing they recognize what you're saying, even if you're trying not to say it to their face, or that you are fully aware of the labels that people try and fix onto you. And giving kids sort of the tools to recognize that, it's an interesting moment that is going on here. And I think that they pull it off pretty well with how Eugene's perspective is on it, where he doesn't let it drag him down, even though by all means, I don't think anyone would judge him negatively for letting it control his life and dictate how he behaves. But the way that he's able to just look on the bright side and seeing the itsy bitsy spider and then save a man's life is remarkable.
Totally agree. Yeah. And I hope I'm not mischaracterizing the jinx bit, because like my memory of, for example, the Flag Day episode is maybe the term cursed is thrown out, or at the very least it's, you know, like as for everything that Arnold tries to do to make the situation better, like he just keeps making things worse. They kind of dance around it. I don't know if they landed upon the term like jinx, and it just like this is an easier way to communicate this feeling that we're just sort of like tiptoeing around. Yeah, I don't know. Emily, I don't know if your memory of it is different or not, but that's at least, you know, the best that my brain can drag up. It feels like it's been years since we did season one things, even though it's been like, you know, one calendar year.
Yeah, no kidding. I also think that it could be the first time that they're calling him a jinx. I can't remember exactly either in his other main character type episodes, but I do think, to everyone's point, like this is definitely the most pointed at labeling him that, as it's the main focus of the entire episode, and it's used so much, which I think again is just like a good stand-in as a tool for kids in real life watching this, going, oh yeah, you know, maybe a kid isn't calling you a jinx, maybe they're calling you, I don't know, a sissy, or you know, they're not calling Eugene a fruit or any queer coded thing necessarily, but it's like he can see the truth in what they're saying in a way that he like is he accepts within himself and is fine with. But it is a tricky one too, to kind of consider as far as labels go, just because, yeah, jinx is just someone with bad luck, but you could put in any stand-in other word, other label that a kid would use on the playground here.
Yeah. Some of which, we are not able to repeat without getting our producer in here to throw a censor on that, some of which may have already been uttered previously this episode. The only label that I feel comfortable using is one that says, you know what, this is a good episode, a certified good episode. Any other labels to add, Dan?
I have one label that I really want to slap on this one, because we've been talking about different movies a lot during this one. And I think whoever wrote this episode, Cody, you may have that in front of you, but they absolutely just watched the movie Clifford before writing this episode, because this is the climax of the, you know, the Martin Short, Charles Grodin vehicle, Clifford.
Joseph Purdy, hey, we'll get the Purdy man on the show, and we'll get him to explain. It sounds like he has some explaining to do.
So you're DP calling him out, Dan? I think. If you want to go back into those credits,
he has a lot to answer for. But this is Clifford. This is the ending moments of Clifford, where it, for those that are uninitiated to that, that is also a horror movie where Martin Short plays a 12-year-old child obsessed with going to Dino Land or Dinosaur World.
Wait, and the even end Dino Land.
It's like Dinosaur World. It's a dinosaur theme park. And the end is Clifford getting stuck on a roller coaster that's T-Rex themed. And it is over a perilous drop, and Charles Grodin comes in, and through the power of love, they save each other. And it's there might be a rope involved in that as well. Like, I'm just saying, they thought they were going to try to pull the wool over our eyes. This Clifford came out, I believe, 1994, 1995. This episode was probably like 97.
98, I see what you did. I mean, right in that ballpark.
I see what you did. This is Clifford, and I'm fine with it.
Unfortunately,
but I'm
mostly just fan casting Eugene as Martin Short now, and it's a pretty good fit, I have to say.
It works.
Oh, boy. Clifford, Martin Short, Charles Grodin, notwithstanding. Any other shout-outs that anybody would like to put forth before we tie a nice bow on this one?
Shout-out to Eugene's fruit roll-up, which he is so excited that he brought with him. Just for moments such as this, when you're stuck on the roller coaster, he's got that in his back pocket. Also, shout out to Cody for calling out the fact that Eugene wears the same thing every day. That made me laugh really hard. Yeah, he wears the same thing every day, just like every other character.
Yeah, every character does that. Wait a minute. Like, why are we putting
on Eugene
they didn't.
About this? Well, these
just
other
like
characters
every,
aren't jinxes.
Every cartoon character to have ever existed, but I did appreciate the call out there.
Now, I think, Cody, you may have jumped the gun a little bit here to go into shout-outs.
Oh, really?
We haven't even talked about... one of the things that I wanted to talk about is, has anyone else been stuck on a roller coaster or something like this at the top of a drop?
No, because like, whenever I'm on a ride that breaks, I leave the amusement park and I never go back. I don't pull a Eugene Horowitz and stick around to see what else happens.
Well, you got to get off the roller coaster.
Yeah, get off
first,
the roller coaster.
Cody.
What do you mean?
Come on. I get thrown off. Did you not see what happened to Eugene on the teacups?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. character, you get up fine.
Yeah, exactly. I just have a scrape. No, I have not had that happen. Has anybody here had that happen? Also, I feel like Dan, before anybody answers, Dan, I feel like you're just gunning for the longest episode crown
you. How dare you? I'm going to walk away from my computer now.
Sure. Emily, have you been personally victimized by an amusement park ride?
I tried to do a jigs bit right there.
I also recognize that this is what Dan is doing, so I'm glad that was also called out, much like Eugene's same outfit that he wears every day. I was thinking a lot about Disney World, which is in Florida, Orlando, Florida. Y'all have maybe heard about Disney World. I never got stuck on a ride, but certainly the Epcot Tower of Terror is the scariest, most, jaw-droppingly horrifying ride I think I was on there. But also... and as far as heights go, but also Space Mountain really terrified me as a kid, which is kind of funny to think about now, because the reason I was scared of it was you couldn't see like where the ceiling was, and it was so dark in there, and I was convinced that the ceiling was just gonna like chop my head off or something while I'm on the Space Mountain ride. Which is even funnier to think now because I was such a short little kid and there's no way that would have ever been designed in such a way that a kid's head could get, you know, lopped off.
Yeah, it would have just been your
that
parents.
That was the fear. And also, yeah, Splash Mountain, that was more of my favorite ride. Space Mountain was too scary because you don't know if your head's going to get chopped off. But Splash Mountain was really fun and maybe, no, not similar to the ride they're on. They're on like a rickety wooden coaster in this episode, which is not my favorite type.
No, yeah, they got the High Roller at Valley Fair, which is this old, purely wooden roller coaster that I you certifiably feel like you're going to shoot off into orbit whenever that goes up a hill at like 20 miles an hour. Genuinely frightening. Yeah, I'm genuinely a proponent of trying everything, you know, at least once. I'm still too much of a scaredy cat to go on Tower of Terror. I believe that was... That's at the park formerly known as MGM Studios. What I would do is just, I would, you know, Tower of Terror is on the right, Rock and Roller Coaster featuring the musical stylings of Aerosmith is on the left. I go left. I ride probably my favorite roller coaster. That one's really good. Space Mountain is also up there at Magic Kingdom. I realize I'm coming off as like one of those Disney World YouTubers, which I am not. But I do remember hearing just on the, you know, shout out to the old spooky tales that I had heard about Space Mountain, where one of the earliest memories I have of like any Disney World thing is hearing, I forget from which source, but like somebody had a heart attack and died on Space Mountain. And so because of that, they like made it less dark and they slowed it down just so it would be less frightening. I have no idea if that's true.
And they never found it. And sometimes when you ride the Space Mountain at night and you listen carefully, you swear you can hear him having his heart attack or something.
Right. And rumor has it the person who disappeared from Space Mountain wore the same thing every day. In the age of the internet, I have not sought to corroborate that story with the internet archives. That was a huge deviation. Any other Disney World related shout outs or any
That's
other
shout outs?
That's
genuinely terrifying.
It oh is. God. Yeah. Sleep tight tonight, everybody.
I mean, like, yeah, don't look up like roller coaster fatalities. That is a thing. Like, you're not just making that up.
I've done that. I've gone into a real dark hole.
I don't like doing that.
It's not a great space.
No, I never rode roller coasters because of aforementioned debilitating anxiety disorders as a child. I have done the Tower of Terror though when I was older because I'm a big Twilight Zone fan. I didn't die. It was very scary. I think that's no longer at Disney World. I think they got rid of the Tower of Terror, which I feel really sad about because there was bespoke archival Rod Serling footage in that ride. So hopefully that was preserved.
I think Tower of Terror may be a Guardians of the Galaxy ride now. It might be.
I wish I had died on it.
The whole park is just Despicable Me and Enchanted. Yeah,
that's Universal. Come on.
Well, thankfully, they didn't transform the Great Movie Ride into something else. They just gave it, you know, the death and proper burial that it warranted. Man, not that I was ever going to go back to Disney World, but however many years ago when the Great Movie Ride shut down, I felt so bummed. And I feel bummed now. Anybody else feel bummed? Any other shout-outs? Any
well,
other
Cody, thank you so much
forth?
for asking me. I've been stuck on many roller coasters because I love roller coasters. The worst one I've been stuck on the High Roller at Valley Fair. I've also been stuck on Power Tower at the top of it for about 20 minutes, which was really upsetting. And unlike Cody, I continued to ride roller coasters that day. I did not leave.
Wow, we thought he was the prankster, but he was actually the Eugene all along.
That's right. I just sat up there and sang Itsy Bitsy Spider to myself quietly.
Well, for as tall of a presence Dan commands in real life, I think he is the certified little freak of this episode. With that, I just want to say, Dan, thank you again so much for being here. It's great, as always, to have you. Tell me, where can people find you? And is there anything that you would like to plug for the fine folks who haven't stopped listening to this episode yet?
Well, no bout a doubt it. You can find me on Twitter at A Dapper Dan Man. You can also find my podcast that I do, Everything We Learned, just by finding that wherever you are currently listening to this. It's a movie appreciation podcast. We talk about different movies that are new releases, older movies that we just took life lessons from, and along the way just have very strange long-winded discussions, kind of like what I brought here today. So if you enjoyed this and how much I derailed the podcast, listen to Everything We Learned.
Ooh, derailed like roller coasters. We hope doesn't happen to them. Very good, Dan. Very good. Well, thank you. Again, if you're still listening, thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. That's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mackin, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I've been Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
And actually, Dan, it's really good that you stretched that out. It ended up being really good timing. We're actually being told, yeah, that the log shoot at Mall of America is back up and running. So we'll just go ahead.
Whoa!